Welcome to the Real News Network. I'm Greg Wilpert in Baltimore. For almost a week, it was unclear who is in charge of the government of Peru. That is, last week, Peru's president, Martin Vizcarra, dissolved the Congress. However, the Congress, which is controlled by far-right politician Keiko Fujimori, ignored the president's order and voted to remove the president from office instead. The vice president was then supposed to take over, but she resigned. Ultimately, Vizcarra seems to have remained in office and has now called for new congressional elections to be held on January 26th of this year. The conflict between Peru's Congress and its president came to a head in the midst of numerous corruption investigations, which led a former president, Alan Garcia, to commit suicide shortly before his arrest and forced the previous president, Pedro Pablo Kuczynski, to resign. Opposition leader Keiko Fujimori herself, her father and former president Alberto Fujimori, and former president Alejandro Toledo have all served time in prison or are currently in prison. So what is going on in Peru? Is it a fight among the country's elite, or is it a struggle to rid the country of corruption, as President Vizcarra says? Joining me now to explore this is Gerardo Renique. Gerardo is professor of history at the City College University of New York and is a member of the editorial board of the journal NACLA. Also, he is the co-author with Deborah Poole of the book Peru, Time of Fear. Thanks for joining us again, Gerardo.
Hi, Greg. Big pleasure.
So let's tackle this first question that I mentioned in my introduction. Is this a fight among Peru's elite between the neoliberal right represented by Vizcarra and the far right represented by Fujimori? Or is this a fight to purge corruption, or what's going on?
Okay, you know, basically, first, what I think is that this conflict between the executive and the judiciary and the legislative represents, you know, it's a tip of the iceberg of a deeper crisis, you know, a crisis of neoliberal governability in Peru. And I think it also marks the end of the political regime that was created, you know, after the fall of Fujimori, but that it's based on the constitution of 1993 that was written during the government of Fujimori. So what exists now, it's a dispute. But I mean, both the President Vizcarra and Congress, they share the same neoliberal strategy for the country. Both of them, there's no difference in their economic and political strategies. The problem is that, as you mentioned it before, a large number of members of Congress, a large number of members of the judiciary have been implicated in these corruption cases. You know, that the most important one, as your listeners may be aware of, it's the so-called car wash operation that involves this corruption of the Odebrecht, a large Brazilian construction company, and that, as you mentioned in your opening, you know, remarks, have five presidents in jail in Peru. So what we have here at stake is that President Vizcarra takes power after the resignation of President Kuczynski in March 2018, you know, and at a moment that there's a massive mobilization in Peru, a massive mobilization against the corruption cases. But what is going to galvanize this anti-corruption and this broad mobilization for democracy against corruption, it's the amnesty that President Kuczynski gave to former ruler Alberto Fujimori that was in jail, you know, for human rights abuses. So this galvanized a very broad movement that very similar to what have existed in other parts of Latin America under the slogan of que se vayan todos, let's get rid of all of them. Parallel to this anti-corruption mobilization, what we've seen since President Vizcarra took power, it's a new wave of mobilizations against, you know, extractivist projects. There's, at the moment, there's there's a mobilization at least in three major, you know, mining sites. There's the case of Tia Maria in the southern part of Peru, a whole valley that is in a paralysis. They're entering their fourth week of paralyzation, protesting the expansion of a mining project. There's the case of Las Bambas, This is a mining corridor in the high provinces of Cusco that at the moment have 10 or 11 communities blockading, you know, the road between the mines and the processing plants. And we also have a renewed mobilization against the privatization of the water system in the city of Lima. More importantly, you know, the labor movement is coalescing around, you know, the rejection of a new labor code that was passed by and proposed by the government of Vizcarra with the support of the National Confederation of Businessmen, an extremely, you know, a draconian code law that particularly affects, you know, younger people, the people coming into the labor force. That has created a very broad rejection in the country and a reactivation of a popular movement. So I would put the anti-corruption mobilization within this broader conflicted situation. So that's the situation. It's not that the closing of Congress has a very broad support of the population. According to the latest polls, it goes between 85 and 92%. So that's the overall situation. Vizcarra is a very weak government, as you mentioned before. He only have 9 reliable, you know, supporters in Congress. The large majority was, you know, controlled by Fujimori. A new election, I think, would clean up, you know, the way to further, you know, democratize the country. I don't think it's going to happen in this coming month. This coming month, I think, are going to be before the election, are going to be extremely tense, and the mobilization will continue. The political activity is going to be dominated by the campaigns to the election. But hopefully, you know, in my take is that the forces of the right and the forces of Fujimori are going to be severely, you know, punished in the next election. And this offers a pretty good opportunity for the left and democratic forces, you know, hopefully, to obtain a good vote in the next election in January.
Well, that's exactly what I wanted to turn to actually next. I mean, there's a number of analysts have said that the left might actually have an opportunity now. And in the last election, the left under Veronica Mendoza almost made it into the runoff, but she only got 19% of the vote. Kuczynski got something like 21%, who ended up winning in the second round.
That's right.
Now, what is Peru's left doing at the moment, and how do you see their chances in terms of making electoral gains in January, assuming that that's when the elections will actually take place?
Okay, first of all, I think that this particular moment, you know, offers a very good possibility for the left, you know, to obtain a very good results. The left have played, both in parliament and in the streets, have played a very important role in all these campaigns and mobilizations against corruption. And on the other hand, you know, the Peruvian left, like it's the case of the left in many other countries in Latin America, it's severely divided. So in the last month and around these campaigns, there's been a coalescence and agreements between, you know, the most important groups in the left, and it seems, you know, that they're going to participate in a united front. On the other hand, the popular movements that are, you know, widespread in the country, but they're not centralized, you know, they're divided by region and by sectors, they're coalescing around something that is called the National Assembly, the Popular National Assembly. And there are conversations between this grouping of social movements, labor organizations, peasants organizations, with these different sectors in the left, but that hopefully would manage, you know, to present a united front in the upcoming election. If that's the case, I think that the left has a very good possibilities, because what you need to take in account too is that the discontent and the majority of the population in Peru and the frustration with the elected officials includes also the people in the left. Mm. You know, the left, you know, but again, you know, I think that if the left keeps in this path of working together, you know, putting their differences aside and managing to establish a pretty good relation with the popular movement, they have a very good possibilities of obtaining a good result in the next elections.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an interesting situation in Peru. In some ways, might be comparable to Colombia, where the left never really won, mainly because of the guerrilla battles that took place, you know, back in the 1970s and 80s, that basically allowed the government to repress the left, even the non-guerrilla left, the non-fighting left. So that's something important to keep in mind, I guess. But I actually want to move on to the other question as to what the other important players are in the military. That is, the other important players seem to be the military and the judiciary. Now, what role are they playing at the moment?
Well, the military are supporting the government of Vizcarra. And, you know, they are in a few hours after Vizcarra dissolved the Congress. You know, the high rank officers, both in the military and the police, came to the National Palace to show their support to Vizcarra. I think the military are going to play a very cautious role, you know, in this. I think they're going to support the president. And because again, you know, there's the difference between the right wing represented by the forces in Congress, particularly the Fujimoristas, they sort of represent, you know, you use the term ultra-right. It's a very interesting coalition of two sectors, you know, very conservative, the all-right, the all-oligarchic right, that is have some representatives in Congress. You know, good allies of the Fujimoristas, as is the case in Brazil or in other places in Central America particularly, this new fundamentalist, you know, Christian right, extremely conservative, extremely reactionary. And on the other hand, the Fujimorismo and the party of Keiko Fujimori, they represent what I describe as a lumpen bourgeoisie. It's a new class of businessmen, politicians that have emerged on the fringes and the shadow of the neoliberal reforms, that their political, you know, behavior and their way of doing business resembles more, you know, a mafia kind of operation than a well-established, you know, bourgeois business class. So that's the difference. And on the other hand, you know, the big business class have relied on the Fujimoristas to push for the more draconian, for the more, you know, neoliberal projects and legislation. But at this moment, you know, the business class, it's in the last week, as they've seen the Vizcarra has the upper hand, they're veering into pushing Vizcarra, you know, into take more seriously their proposals. So this is going to be an interesting, you know, we're going to see what happens in the next month. On the other hand, Vizcarra, given the fact that he doesn't have that much political support, and now he's embarked in this, you know, move to reform, to democratize, you know, the judiciary, his only support is in the population. So I think he's going to be very hesitant in pushing for further, you know, proposals or suggestions from the business class. So in that sense, you know, this is going to be a very tricky situation. And in the case of the judiciary, I think they at the moment they're in the defensive. You know, many of the most corrupt members of the judiciary, you know, were already, you know, fired by Vizcarra last year when he proposed a reform of the judiciary. Some of them now have escaped the country. You know, they have trials pending, their charges against them for corruption. So I think both, you know, the judiciary is pretty severely, you know, damaged by these last reforms. They will try to rearticulate, and we're going to see what happens, you know, with the next, hopefully, with the next Congress is going to be a clearer mandate, you know, to keep, you know, the reform of the judiciary and the cleaning up of the judiciary. But I think that's going to be a very, you know, tricky business, because on the other hand, another element that I haven't mentioned, but it's important, you know, the judiciary is also infiltrated by the elements of the network of former intelligence service that were planted in there by Montesinos and Fujimori, that they act as mercenaries. You know, they offer their service to the one that gives pays them more money. Wow. You know, many of those connections are still present. Many of those operatives that work for Montesinos and Fujimori operate as independent consultants or operators, you know, to for political forces or for the business class. So that complicates the situation. That's one of the sequels. That's one of the, you know, that's part of the legacy of Fujimori, of the Fujimori regime, you know, the elements of the intelligence service that he left infiltrated, particularly in the judiciary.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to leave it there, but we're going to continue to follow the situation in Peru as it develops, especially leading up to possible elections in January. I was talking to Gerardo Renique, professor of history at the City College of the City University of New York. Thanks again, Gerardo, for having joined us today.
Thanks to you, Greg. Have a nice day. Bye.
And thank you for joining the Real News Network.
Hey, y'all. My name is Tharna Noor, and I'm a climate crisis reporter here at the Real News Network. This is a crucial moment for humanity and for the planet. So if you like what we do, please, please support us by subscribing at the link below. Thank you.